Welcome, welcome, welcome to the SubHub podcast. I'm Dani Moreno.
And I'm MK Sullivan. And this episode will be our second installment, if we can use that word, of the USA Championships episodes that we're going to be doing. And today we are going to talk to two race directors, Tom Hooper and Julian Carr. But first, Dani, how are you feeling? How's training going?
Oh, man. I'm feeling now really good, but I went down to Santa Barbara to get some sea level training in, and also I was really stoked because I was going to do a 10K time trial, and I was like, I'm going to beat my track PR, I'm feeling really fit, etc. And my second day there, third day there, I started feeling a little funny and immediately was thinking that I might be sick, and so I gave it like one more night, and the next morning, yeah, I got to go home, which kind of sucks. So in the moment, I was like bitter about it, but it's just a time trial. It's not like an actual race. And then once I got home, I was like hella sick for 2 days. I was so out, like not leaving the bed, like didn't have an appetite, etc. And so, yeah, it was pretty rough, but now I'm finally out of it. So now I have like that extra surge of energy that you get post being sick.
Well, I'm so recovered.
yeah, exactly. I've just been incrementally increasing each day. I've been doing some more cross training than running. And then I think today is like my first long, well, I guess I worked out yesterday, but I'll do some longer run efforts this weekend. So starting to shift to way too cool, which is exciting. I'm stoked for that. How are you doing, Black Canyon debutante?
I'm good. After you got sick, I like started slamming vitamin D and C and zinc because I was like, oh my gosh, we're getting so close.
Yeah.
So by the time this episode comes out, I will be like 2 weeks out from the race, which is kind of crazy, but I'm so ready for it. Like mentally, I'm just ready to be there. but things are going good. I'm doing just like really long kind of workouts. Yesterday I did this really weird like downhill workout into a fairly long amount of time at zone two, and it felt way better than when I did something like that last week. And so just like starting to get into the rhythm of some faster running, because most of what I've just been doing is easy running. And it's so funny how I think we've talked about this before, how that stuff just like doesn't go away. Like you're like, oh, I'm not fast anymore. I'm so unfit because I haven't done a speed workout since shit, I don't know, like September or October. No, I'm still fast. It's fine. So things are feeling good. I have my last, like, it sounds weird to even call it a long run now because it's like, oh, I'm only doing 1 3-hour run this weekend. But last kind of long run, and then tapering and driving down to Arizona the next Friday, I think. So
yeah, like a week from leaving almost, pretty much.
Yeah
it's wild. I love that race specific stuff because it means you're so close, like starting to get more to the nitty-gritty. And yeah, the speed stuff is so funny because I find when I start a training cycle, you're always like a little fresh because you might be coming off a break or something. You're like, oh, I'm fast. And then as the training cycle progresses, you get more and more tired. And it's like, oh, I was more fit a month ago or 2 months ago. It's like, no, that physiologically doesn't make any sense. And then once you get like a little bit of rest, you're like, oh, now I'm like hella fast.
I'm feeling like so good.
Yeah, but it's funny how that happens. Okay. Well, that's very exciting. Coming up.
And then I guess the next episode that we release will be like right before the race. So that's just wild to think about.
Yeah. So MK will be doing a chat with her coach, Rick. What is Rick's last name?
Rick Floyd.
Floyd. That's right.
We're doing a coaching series of sorts as well. So we have our US Championship series as well as our coaching series here. And yeah, the week of the race will be our first installment of that, hopefully.
Yeah, which I have a feeling people are going to enjoy that kind of like inside to the locker room sort of chat. But shall we introduce today's guest?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. Yeah. Um, So we have no other than Tom Hopper and Julian Carr, two race directors. Tom actually has been on the Sub Pop. He was one of our first guests, I
Yeah,
think
back in
technically.
like April.
Yeah, back last April, his race series organization called 603, which is located on the East Coast, they hosted Sunapee Scramble last year, which was the VK and the Mountain Classic. But it also, the series includes many USA iconic races such as Loon Mountain, Ragga 50K, and like I said, Sunapee Scramble. But this year, Loon Mountain is again a USA championship. I have gone out there twice earlier in my career to run this championship, and this is just such a cool race for the East Coast. There's great energy. It's one of the most like diverse and age groups races I have run a couple of times. Like, there's a lot of kids that jump into this race, which I think is really cool. And then, yeah, folks of all ages. So it's exciting to see that Loon Mountain again is a part of the US Championship. And that race is on July 7th. It is the Vertical Mountain Championship.
Yep. And then we also have Julian Carr, who is a professional skier and the founder of the Cirque Series. Julian is very familiar with the mountain scene. He's been hosting the Cirque Series for quite a while. But while Tom has hosted several USA championships, this will be Julian's first time hosting. And so we chat a little bit with him about what it means to be selected, because it seems like maybe he's been trying for a while. And yeah, I'm really excited that Cirque Series is being included as a USA championship race, because those races are hard and like they seem perfect for a mountain selection race.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect introduction to, I think, more European style of racing. So yeah, it's exciting to see them, and you'll see in the conversation it's kind of cool. Like, Tom is kind of pseudo mentoring Julian, which I love on the process, because Tom is yeah, he's also gone with Team USA to World
Yeah.
Championship races. So Tom is, how do you say that,
He's a
like,
seasoned veteran in this space.
seasoned, yeah, seasoned veteran. For some reason, I was thinking of the word raisin. I don't know why I thought of the
He's
word
been out in
raisin.
the sun for a while.
Yeah,
Julian's
he's
just a
not.
fresh grape.
Yeah. That's a terrible.
Oh, I
Tom
like it
is young and
anyways.
spry in spring. So yeah, check out our last episode. That's where we list all of the USA championships that are this year. And one more thing about these two races, the USATF Vertical Championship again is on July 7th. Loon Mountain, July 13th is USA Mountain. They are two races that you could do back to back and get like the full US experience. You could go to the East Coast, have that classic VK, and then go over to Snowbird, Utah. So we are highly encouraging people to do both of these races. Also, if you haven't already, check out our Instagram, because with this episode, we are also doing a super sick giveaway. Tom and Julian have both generously offered two race entries for the races. So we are going to have two winners. We also, those winners are going to win a Grayson planner, the Grayson training log planner. I'm also going to send them the basic calendar planner from the Runner's Binder. And then we also have some swag from Never Second and Urban Armor. Wow, I can't talk today.
That's all
Urban
right.
Armor Gear, which
That's a lot.
if you don't know Urban Armor Gear, they create phone cases, laptop cases, but also just like modular things for travel. And one of my absolute favorite items for them is the Dop Kit. And it's just like this very resilient, kind of like zipper pouch thing. And I know it sounds maybe lame, but I've tried a lot of zipper pouches, and this shape is legit. And it's just like, is so rugged. That's what I go to all the time out of the few zipper pouches that I have. So I just wanted to give this away because it's so good. And their phone cases, they last forever. Like, there's videos of them where they like throw them out of planes and cars and stuff, and the phone is fine. So that's what I use. And yeah, so we're excited to give that swag away. So Check out the
Yeah, that
Instagram
is your
posts.
name.
It's probably going to be some combination of like you have to comment and share, but the exact instructions will be there and it's going to be live for a week. So get in there, get your entry, and then hopefully you can get win a entry to Loon and Cirque. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. And so enjoy our conversation with Tom and Julian. But before that, here is a message about our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by our friends at NeverSecond. NeverSecond uses a modular system that allows you to create the exact carbohydrate formula for your need and activity. Their products are meant to be mixed and matched so that you can have 30, 60, 90, or even 120 grams of carbs per hour. As a professional athlete, I was introduced to NeverSecond about a year ago after a rough race at the Mont Blanc Marathon. I was trying to take in gels that required a lot of water, but without a crew and the fact that there weren't enough aid stations to adequately match my intake, it became quite the struggle of a day. After that experience, I started using NeverSecond in training because their liquid gels weren't as sticky and require less water and are much easier to get down, making my race day and training nutrition immediately more successful and simple. Their gels also contain 200 milligrams of sodium, which is a real bonus on hot days and especially humid days if you're me. And if you want to try NeverSecond, just head to neversecond.com. That's never, NEVER number 2.com. NEVER number 2.com. And use code SUBHUB25 for a 25% discount on all of your orders. Hey, Julian. Hey, Tom. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Hi.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you both. Congrats on both being selected for the, having your race as part of a USA championship this year. Starting with you, Tom, how does that feel to be selected again?
It's awesome. Anytime that, you get a US selection race, it brings a bigger spotlight onto your race, so it's great.
And Julian, this is your first time hosting a US championship race. So, how are you feeling about it?
I'm thrilled. I've kind of been watching from the sidelines over the last 4 or 5 years, and looks like such a fun time with lots of great elite athletes. And it's different to all of a sudden be in that mix that has to do with representing the US throughout the world. To say this is the national championship, it's pretty cool to say that for the USA. So we're very stoked and look forward to it.
Yeah, definitely a huge congrats there on your first time. MK and I have chatted about this before on the podcast, but there's something about it being called a USA championship or, being able to say that you podiumed at a USA champion that's very translatable, like across different sports. Like, not everyone knows what Broken Arrow is or maybe the UTMB races, but if you say, I won the USA championship. They're like, oh, wow, you're on Team USA. That's really cool. So I think, yeah, having that badge on your race is really cool. Just a little bit of insight for the folks, like how long has this process been since, potentially you pitched your race or, were reached out to from USATF?
Yeah, it's a pretty quick turnaround just because you don't know when Stellina or NECEx are going to be. So it goes pretty quick. You kind of have to have your ducks in a row, and then it's boom, you send them everything, they vote on it, and then it's go time.
Yeah, and on my end, the first time I struck up a conversation with the committee was in 2018. And we've had some good dialogue going over the years. So obviously, yeah, once I did get everything submitted this year and it looked like it was actually real, like Tom said, it was, a 2 week turnaround. So it's kind of a 5 year process turned into like a 1 week big storm of communication that panned out great. So, but yeah, it's been a while on my end, at least since the first time I tried to put it on the radar. So, 20 minutes though is correct.
Yeah, so it's almost like you guys just have to have this like permanent template ready to submit whenever USATF's ready to pick a selection race. You're like, okay, I'm ready. I've got this. I've had this in the vault for 5 years now.
Yeah, exactly. And like Danny said, I actually didn't even think about this is going to be such a great way to communicate to, I mean, I want to say friends and family, but for lack of a better term, when people are like, what's Cirque Series? And I'm like, oh, it's a mountain running race. And they're like mountain biking? I'm like, no, foot running. And they're like, oh, sweet, you know, cool. But now it'd be like, yeah, and one of our races is the national championships through the USA Track and Field. They'll be like, oh, okay. So it is. It's just like this nice anchor that provides a little bit of clarity and just makes things a little more special, you know?
It stamps some, you know, legitimacy onto you. You're like, boom, okay.
Yeah. And it's something too that, you know, when I came into the sport from collegiate athletics, and even before that, I used to do junior Olympics and stuff like that. That's immediately what I sought out was USATF races, because that's all I knew. So I feel like for those, especially with the sport growing, with a lot of those athletes that are coming from track and field, from high school, et cetera, they immediately seek these out too. So it's kind of having that immediate notoriety with those younger athletes as well, not just the athletes that have been in the sport for a while. What kind of opportunities come with, you know, organizing a USA championship race besides, you know, getting the badge? Like, what other benefits have you seen, Tom, over the years of having that title?
Yeah, I think, you know, attendance, and it's more so not from the elites, but it's from everybody else, because there's not really any other sport where you can go to a national championship and run with the person that you saw in the magazine list last month. You know what I mean? Like, 6 miles is obtainable for everybody. It's going to hurt worse than anything you've ever felt, but it's totally doable for the weekend warrior, you know, the back of the packer, the mid packer. And it's so cool to run, you know, with your, if you want to call them your idol, your hero, your, you know, whoever you look up to. That just is, you know, I think it's lost a little bit on the elites. Maybe they don't understand how much some of these people are looking up to them. And having a beer with them after in the lodge, I mean, I'm sure that maybe get overwhelming for some of them, but it's a big deal in that sense. So I think that that's what really promotes, you know, the attendance of the races. It goes from, you know, for us, it's, you know, it goes from 6 or 7 to over 1,000. So it's cool.
How do you guys think that having these US championships and having them grow as well contributes to the overall growth of mountain running in the US?
I mean, I think that from what it looks like to me is there's such a strong emphasis media-wise on European races, which is great because there are world-class athletes, there's world-class mountains, it's part of the culture there, I get it. But, you know, there's a lot of amazing US-based mountain races that, you know, it's the time that the media has the chance to shine a light on itself domestically. And I think that it's fun to get caught up in the kind of global outlook on mountain running, but it is very Euro emphasized, which is obviously for a reason, I get it. But, you know, it's cool to reel things in a little bit and shine a light just on what we have going on in the US, because certainly there's a lot of amazing world-class races and athletes that are US-based.
Yeah. And I would say even more so post-COVID too, a lot more of the US top athletes are competing abroad for a variety of reasons. And so at least myself witnessing that in the sport too, I think it went from like 3 athletes that potentially had that extra, like, no, they're world class, like they've gone and proven themselves overseas, to now like 20, 30 athletes where it's like, these athletes have all been in the top 10 in some of the biggest world races. So I think that's really exciting from a USA championship point too, even, you know, pitching the race and being like, we're going to have 20 athletes who have been on the podium at Golden Trail. Like, yeah, that's just such a cool opportunity.
Well, that's just another way that when these athletes do go travel abroad, you know, the best way for them to articulate their background is to say, yeah, I, you know, placed 4 podiums in a row in the USA championships. You know, that's the easiest card to put on the table that translates globally. So it's just fun to have the Nat Champs be a part of that kind of global conversation as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that the more excited that people get about US championships, like the more awareness that's brought to the fact that we have US championships in trail running, like the more likely you're going to get like there's always going to be some athlete that none of us know about now who's going to show up to these US championships and kind of blow us away, because it just gets more competitive.
Especially with the short distance.
Yeah, exactly.
The short distance, you get these kids that bounce out of college and you've never heard of them, and all of a sudden, boom.
Yeah. Or the, you know, Nordic skiers that, oh, I'll try mountain running, and they freaking podium, you know, and you're like, who is this guy? And then you look them up and you're like, oh, they're like 20th in the world in the Olympics in Nordic skiing. I get it.
Yeah, it's a huge opportunity for everyone, and you don't have to travel overseas. You can just stay here in the United States. So we have, Tom is the race director for the Loon Mountain race, which has historically been part of the USA championship circuit for many of years. And that this year is the USATF Vertical Mountain. And speaking of international competition, that qualifies the top two athletes for Challenge Stellina, which is a huge race in Italy that happens each year. Grayson won it. Grayson Murphy won it a couple years ago. Anna Gibson podiumed. Christian Allen has podiumed there. So many great talents, young talents, have gone and competed at that race. And then for Julian's race, which is the USATF Mountain Championship, the Cirque Series Snowbird event, because he has many events in that series, those top two go to NACAC this year. So it is cool that, you know, you can stay in the States and potentially earn the opportunity to be supported to go and travel and compete overseas. Yeah.
You
what do you
correct.
Want to say? On? Yes. Definitely on that. And so for those athletes that are seeking out these races, for you, Tom, how would you describe the Loon Mountain course in three words?
Relentless. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's you know, it starts off not so bad, but it just keeps getting worse. It's kind of like a tractor pull, you know, it's easy, 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 and keeps getting harder and harder, harder. And yeah, it's once you hit, you know, the gondola, you think you're all right. And then you have a slight little downhill, and then you have a kilometer at 44%. It's brutal.
What's the total stats on that vertical?
Just that vertical or the whole thing? It's 3,000. Yeah, 3,000 feet.
3,000.
Six miles, 3,000 feet.
Dang.
Yeah, and that there's a mile section of almost a cross country style track in the Nordic section, so it's not that much vert there. So it's probably like 3,000 feet and 4.5 miles.
Do the athletes have the option of taking the gondola down when they're done?
Absolutely. You can either run down or take the gondola down.
That's a nice feature.
Yeah.
Loon Mountain is the race that has upper walking boss, right? That's what you're talking about with
That's what we're talking about.
Oof. It's 1 kilometer, 40% grade.
I've heard legends.
it's a They're different true. Kind of hurt. Yeah.
I got to come out sometime and check it out, because all the photos I've seen and obviously the word of mouth, it's a nice reputation you got going on out there. So good suffering going on.
Yeah, it's definitely a classic. And I would say relentless is definitely correct. And I would also say the grass is an interesting factor to it, because for a lot of these courses, you're on dirt, you're on rock, and the ground is like pretty intact, I guess. But for some reason, the grass is like very, very difficult. And it like, especially on upper walking boss, it's just, yeah, it like adds this factor. It's like cross country on steroids. It's fun.
And so then, I guess, Julian, same question to you. Can you describe your course in three words?
I'll say like a book, because there's so many chapters to the experience. I feel like from the service road start, you know, mass start with hundreds of other people, things start to thin out, and you get up on this beautiful cirque that has these amazing vantage points of the entire Cottonwood, Little Cottonwood Canyon. And then, you know, it's kind of dramatic and high alpine. And then you get back on to kind of where the top of the trim hits Hidden Peak, and you pass that by, and, you know, it's like revisiting society again, because there's the aid station, people up there rooting you on that took the tram. And then you duck back behind the tram, get a little bit of downhill, and you go back up, you know, Baldy, which is a completely different feel than the Cirque Ridge that ascends Hidden Peak. So the second peak just has a totally different vibe, and you kind of for a moment think that the hardest part is over, and the climb up to Baldy is, you know, an 800 foot climb that is pretty steep. So right when you think things are going to kind of get easier, they're not. And then the views from the top of Baldy, you can see all the way back into Big Cottonwood, Mount Tipinogus. Really, it's kind of a 360 situation. And then you drop into Mineral Basin. And then that's a holy, you feel like you're way out there because you're just facing Heber Valley and American Fork. And it's like, wow, I'm out here now. I'm like disconnected because you're on the other side of Little Cottonwood Canyon. And then you get to go through a tunnel, which is amazing, and it cools you down. And then you pop out, and then it's just a fun downhill after that. So it's just like this really dynamic, changing experience that just feels like your character in a book is the best way to say it, like a book.
You left out the biggest thing. Like, what happened? How about no air? You're at 11,000 feet.
Yeah, that's
you
gotta remember
you have people coming from not 11,000 feet.
It's a very good point. I guess I take that for granted because I grew up in Salt Lake and I'm in those mountains so often that, yeah, you know, the base is around 8,000 feet and the top, I think we're around 11,300 at the top of the race. And, you know, obviously there's lots of longer trail run races, but ours is about 8.7 miles and has 3,800 vertical. So same thing. It's just short and sweet, but absolutely brings you to your capacity. You know, like everything you got is tested. And then it's fun because you're done. You know, first place usually comes across the finish line in an hour 10 or so. Average person is like 2:20. Last place is like 4 hours. But that whole environment, seeing people cross the finish line, just so spent. But then they recover and you're not just ruined for days or weeks. You know, you kind of recover on the spot and you're able to mingle and hang out and high five the people that were around you throughout the race.
So yeah. A book in an airtight bag. Got it.
I got to leave that part out. We want people to sign up.
You take the air out of the bag.
Right.
You know, it's almost short enough that like you probably can't even tell.
Exactly. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, keep in mind, Julian is currently at an 11,000 foot cabin, so yeah. He's in the sweet spot right now.
Will say, every time I go to sea level, I always try to go for a run within the first day because I feel like, you know, superhuman. It's crazy how it does translate like that. And obviously, like, to your point, Tom, the opposite. If you're coming from lower elevations, it certainly stings a little more.
Yeah, definitely. So if you are eyeing the mountain championships, consider maybe getting there a little bit earlier, potentially, to get used to altitude or do altitude training at some point. Or right before, to show up within the day, because that also works, we have found.
They're going to do the double. They're going to come to Loon on Sunday, and then we're all flying to Utah.
Yes.
Like 2 days later.
Yes. Yeah, because the vertical is on this July 7th, and the mountain is on July 13th, so you can do both. They're set up so you can do both, which is awesome. And then something just based off of how you guys describe the courses, it just makes me so excited because I think both of these are exceptional selections for the race category that they're representing. So Loon is a true, like, as close, very close to like the textbook version of a vert, but you really are getting the 3000 closer to the 4 miles than the true 6 miles. And so that's perfect to select a vert team. And then same with the mountain course, it's like, it is a mountain circuit, something you would most likely see overseas as well. So it's cool to just have those great selection races.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. What's your race top out at, Tom, elevation wise?
Not very high, 3,200 feet, something like that. Yeah, it's not high.
We're out there. That's really high, right?
Right.
Add in the humidity too, and it feels 8,000 feet.
Right,
yeah, exactly. In July, it's just a poor man's altitude,
right?
As they say.
Yeah.
So you guys have both been putting on these races for quite some time. So I'm curious, like, how have your races evolved over the years, and are there any like changes that you're going to plan for this U.S. championship version?
On my end, you know, when I first started the races in 2015, Snowbird was one of the first four races we had that first year. and our course is unchanged. I've just been skiing on snowbird my whole life, and I just kind of instinctually knew that would be a great course. That's very interesting. And I really have liked how the course record has been something since 2015. And it's a course that everyone loves. There's no bottlenecking. And it's beautiful. So as far as attendance and vibes and energy, you know, it took us quite a few, you know, 3-4 years to get things up to where I first envisioned them. And now certainly we're at that first kind of vision I had for the races. So now it's fun. It's another challenge to, you know, learn and talk to a lot of, you know, the elites and you guys that have attended the Nat Champs and try to understand like what we can contribute to that experience, how we can evolve as a race series, because I feel like we're doing so many things right and I'm really proud of it. And now that we have the opportunity to host the national championship, it's like, how can we step up? You know, how can we keep evolving, keep progressing? So it's going to be a fun challenge, and I look forward to just seeking out as many conversations as I can with athletes and other media, and just people that have been a part of that community to learn, like, what can we do better? What can we do that's new? Or what are we doing that we shouldn't change, and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, for us, it's the same. I mean, the course has changed barely just because of what the resort has done. They put in some, you know, mountain bike course here or there, but it is 99%, you know, the exact same, tried and true. Now it's just basically trying to keep up with the technology and make this more a spectator-friendly sport. Now it's, you know, hey, where can we, how do we do live streaming? How do we make it better? How do we, you know, get, you know, these, how do we get everything out so that, you know, your parents can watch from home and in five states over? Like, how do we make it more spectator friendly? That's, I guess that's our biggest goal now. The race itself is, you know, pretty sturdy. There's not much that needs to be changed. But that, yeah, that's our biggest goal, is just trying to get it to be a little more tech savvy and get in there.
Yeah, which Sunapee, I would say, was a success last year. Like,
yeah,
that crushed. A lot of people were able to watch. We were on the TV screen inside the lodge area. So that was super fun. Speaking of live stream, are you going to have live stream again this year, Tom? And will you do live stream, Julian?
We are, yeah. We're gonna do it again. We're in the, you know, nice, going through it now, trying to figure out where we, how many Starlinks we need to have, where we need to have them, all that good nonsense.
Cool. Well, definitely keep us in mind.
TBD on my end. I know that's an important piece of showcasing, obviously, what we got going on. So it's on the list.
Nice.
Well, we're excited. We love watching. And yeah, if you guys need some commentators, just let us know.
You're on the list.
I mean, we had so much fun last year.
We could cookie cutter what we have at Loon, and I'll just bring the laptop to Snowbird. We can do it right there.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, we had so much fun last year, even though I sounded like a dying frog. I was so sick. But that's okay. It was worth it. So in terms of, like, I guess athlete preparation, we want you guys to kind of give some advice or insight, I guess, to people who are looking to run these races. So what kind of training or preparation do you feel that the elite athletes typically undergo or should undergo for your guys's races, considering its challenging nature?
Yeah, and something that, you know, obviously applies to everyone else that joins the race as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say running is obviously, you gotta have those miles put in, but, you know, just understanding that we kind of gear down. We really just have really steep hiking, that if you can kind of pull off that grandpa jog kind of pace is also, you know, pretty heroic, because it's so hard to even remotely kind of jog when you're going straight up these mountain ridges. So I just say putting in as much running mileage that translates, but also, you know, seek out steep hikes and just power hike a lot, because that's certainly going to be how all of our races are built. They're just straight up. So there's not many people that are actually able to even run, quote unquote, run the entire race. Like, your hands on these power hiking a significant amount of the uphill.
Yeah, the same. Whatever it takes to get into granny gear, just kind of grind it out. I mean, step mill. I'm just trying to think, what are you doing in, during the winter? I mean, that's kind of tough, so it's, most people's treadmills don't go up to 44% grade.
Yeah, Danny, obviously, you being a part of a lot of these races, how have you found that what kind of training has translated the best for you, or how have you accidentally showed up to a race and in the middle of it been like, whoops, I didn't train right?
Well, my first experience at Loon, it was that for sure. I was pleasantly surprised after the first mile. I was like, oh, this is, oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Bye, everybody. I'll be back here. And then just a very slow death. But I found, honestly, weight training has helped me the most with like the really steep stuff. Like, yes, doing that, but also incorporating like lunges and squats and everything to really get that power to get up those steeper grades, I have found is really helpful. Just for like a technical aspect too, are pulls allowed for your races? Tom, go first. Yeah, no.
No, this one they're not, no.
We allow poles as of now. I guess I'll chat more with USATF, but yeah, we've always allowed poles, and I'd say that it didn't necessarily translate to doing better. I think it's just some people that are looking out for their bodies a little more, because certainly everyone that's ever podiumed in the pro category has not used poles at our races.
I think more so it's more, I think, because of how many people are in it, it's more of a safety factor than it is a benefit on. There's no need to use poles at Loon, I don't think. That I don't yeah I don't think it would make a difference. I think it's more of just having 1,000 people swinging poles would be would be dangerous.
Yeah, especially on walking boss, because most people are on all fours. You like get a
right
pull to the eye, like that
right
would
you're just like
be
not looking up. Yeah.
detrimental. Yeah, sorry. Go MK.
I haven't run either of Loon or Cirque, but another thing that I
So
would
we know who our
suggest,
favorite is then. Hi, Danny.
watch out.
Yeah.
Another thing that I would suggest, especially for athletes that like don't necessarily live in mountainous areas, is honestly like working on your speed helps, like flat speed helps so much with climbing, especially with those like collegiate athletes. Don't underestimate your flat speed when it comes to climbing.
I agree. I actually have never really been a runner, you could say. I've always just been out hiking in the mountains, and I made a point a few years ago to hammer out, a really no big deal, but just 2 or 3 miles a day before the season started, because I still run all the races as race director with my radio in hand, and just kind of audit the courses I go to make sure the flag markings, how it should be, all the EMTs are in the right spot, the aid stations are doing well. So it's more of a working lap. But anyway, I found that you're right. When I actually train just to run, straight up run, instead of always just relying on mountain strength, I was like, wow, I'm definitely faster, which I was totally shocked by, but I was like, let's try this.
Yeah, that's why you get all those like collegiate athletes that come straight off a track season and they crush a VK and you're like, "What? You haven't run up a mountain like your whole life."
Yeah. Or
Yeah.
those steeplecross kids.
Yep.
Yeah, I'll bring it back. 2016 Addie Bracey, Loon Mountain, crushed everyone. Her first mountain race ever, just boop, straight up.
Was
And
that
that
the
was
year that she also qualified for the trials in the 10K?
Yes, yeah, exactly. And that
Yeah,
was the year I faded. I was like, bye.
we had Grayson Murphy, her first trail run race out after her college career was our Cirque Series Brighton race.
Oh,
And
yeah.
yeah, everyone was just kind of like, I wonder how this will translate. And she did come in second, but I don't think she's came in second ever since.
I don't think so either.
Yeah,
Yeah, that was with Anime Flynn, I think, the
Anime
10K.
Flynn came in third, and first was Morgan.
Oh yeah, Morgan.
Cross races
Yeah.
Morgan did. So
Anime
Morgan
Flynn is
still showed
also
up.
somebody who focuses on their flat speed.
Totally. But it's fun to see people come, because last year a All-American cross-country athlete from BYU, well, we all know Christian is doing quite well, but on the girls' side, I can't remember her name, but You know, it either translates or it doesn't. Because one came out from BYU, just her career just ended, and I was like, oh, she's probably gonna kick butt too. And she didn't quite crush it. And then I didn't see her do any other trail run races. So I think either you find the joy in the technicality, and the new challenge of it all, and your body adapts and you thrive, or you don't.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's a mix between lungs and legs. Like, what do you focus on? Do you focus on the lungs, or I guess you try to find a happy medium.
Yeah, it's always a challenge and an opportunity to try and figure it out. That's why I find trail running so much fun. You just like everyone's trying to crack the code, and I don't think it ever is going to get cracked quite perfectly, but you find what works for you, which
Well,
is
yeah, and it's like the courses change, the weather's different.
exactly.
You
The
know,
altitude is different.
it's never like that's why it's so fun to be in the mountains. And
Does Snowbird have any chance of having snow in July? Has it ever happened?
yeah, no, it's happened. We haven't seen snow during one of our races, but it certainly has happened historically in Utah, those elevations. This one year in particular, the forecast did show a sail coming in with nothing behind it. So we knew if it did hit us, it would be short-lived. So we started the race on time. There's no reports of lightning anywhere. And the barometer and the humidity didn't lend any kind of story that would be dangerous for lightning. So we, you know, sent everyone off and we started going up the cirque, and this big wind was coming in and this real dark horizon was coming right at us. I was like, wow, we're gonna get hit with this thing. And I'm like, you know, I know it's gonna be short-lived, but here we go. And I had just my t-shirt on, my running tee, and you know, a lot of people had brought their rain jacket. In the start of the race, I was kind of, you know, laughing to myself, them, you know, internally, because I was like, oh, they have their jacket, like, well, they don't need that. So we get up on the ridge, and I do really well with cold, and it was super windy. Like really kind of like heavy rain droplets near, they're kind of like almost sleet, almost hail, just stinging you for like, you know, your whole climb up to the Hidden Peak. And we had about 30 people take the tram down because they were just too cold. They couldn't pull it off. But it was amazing because as you went down and back around the tram and started coming up, the sun was already breaking through. By the time we finished the race and had awards, the sun was completely back out and, you know, everything was totally warm again. So again, just lends to that chapters of a book kind of thing. But we've not seen snow, but that day is super memorable. Everyone that ran the race that year will remember that one because it was really cold and really gnarly for about 15 to 20 minutes.
A true, true mountain race. Got
Yes.
the full experience in an hour to 2 hours. So let's kind of shift gears to logistics. So people have heard a little bit about each course. They're stoked. They want to sign up for both. First, they're gonna know that they can't use poles. And then they might go next to, do I need to buy a new pair of shoes or do I already have the shoes that I need? What kind of shoes would you recommend for these races? Tom, you go first.
Oh,
Or can you
that's
run
you. Oh man, now I'm gonna forget his name. From out west. Anyways, he ran in road shoes. We told him I think it's a bad idea. Keith Garrett, I think his name is. Anyways,
Oh.
yeah, he came and he had asked us a bib pickup. He's like, "What do you think?" He did well. So it is possible. I wouldn't recommend it. I'd go trail shoes, but it is possible to do it in road shoes.
I imagine that if it's wet at all, like if you guys have gotten any rain, road shoes would be such a bad idea on the upper walking
It would
paths.
be terrible, especially with the, you know, the little bit of grass that's on there. I mean, you just
Yep.
kind of
Slide right out.
yeah.
Right. So trail shoes, ideally. You probably could even get away with cross country shoes if it was like an athlete coming from college, like not the full on spikes, but just like that kind of lighter shoe because you are mostly going uphill.
Right.
What about you, Julian, for your course? What would you recommend for people?
You know, I think having a pretty, you know, stereotypical mountain running rugged shoe definitely lends some leverage. We've seen people come with racing slicks, basically pretty much, and they struggle. I actually walk around the vendor village before the race, and if I see some, you know, newbies that look like they know what they're doing, but they have their own shoes on, I'll be like, hey, we should go over to the on tent and get some demos today, because you're going to be very happy about it. I think, you know, at the same time, people know how to travel through the mountains. You can pull it off. I've seen people do quite well wearing shoes that don't translate. But I just think, wow, if they would have had real mountain shoes on, how much more of a better experience and less like critical concentration than not eat shit, you know? It's like, so that's just it. I think the more you can have some mountain bike tires on your feet through that kind of terrain, really technical, really high alpine, dynamic, full on mountain running, you definitely want to have some shoes that you're going to trust each step.
Especially for that down. I can imagine that down is going to be pretty gnarly.
Yeah, absolutely. For the down, there, up and down, the more you can trust your steps that you're there, they're going to support you and not slip out is huge.
Yeah, I feel like if you're wearing like a road carbon shoe at a Cirque Series race, you might break your ankle.
I've seen people do it and I'm like, you know, but I think, you know,
I would break my ankle.
Yeah, you have to shorten your stride and just stay more balanced and take way more steps than if you can kind of open things up a little bit with better shoes.
Yeah, for sure. So both of your races are open to the public, but they are US championships as well. So two questions would be like, when is your registration opening and how can people register? And also, will you have like an elite athlete application as well?
Yes. All of it. Yeah, it's open. Registration is open now. You can go to Ultra Sign Up 603 Endurance, Instagram, Facebook, wherever. The link's on there. And then, yeah, we have an elite thing as well. We also have a youth division. So we give a discount to get more kids into trail running. So we just started that last year and it worked really well. So we're continuing that.
What ages have you seen at Loom?
So we started with U20, and anybody that's under 20, so usually it's between, you know, 14 and 20.
Cool. That's a good idea. I've always toyed with the idea of having a youth category, because we have not a ton, but, you know, we have 7-8-year-olds and lots of teenagers, which is really cool. I try to make them feel special, and we usually do an award where we bring up the youngest competitor of the day.
Yep.
Give them a shout out, give them the Grom Award.
If just they're in single digits, I usually have a conversation with the parent real quick. Be like,
yeah,
damn, what this is, right? Like, this isn't a friendly 5K. They're upper walking by, and they usually say, yeah, well, we just, you know, we hike this and we hike that, and they run down the resume. I'm like, hey, it's on you.
Yeah, same here for sure. We've had 6-year-olds, actually our youngest, and now that our Alyeska race in Alaska, which is our by far most rugged.
That's so gnarly.
Yeah.
That sounds like a very Alaska thing though.
Oh, it is. It is. And that's the thing, is just by seeing the parents and seeing the kid, I was like, yeah, I don't even need to go have a conversation with them. They'd be insulted if I came and had a chat, you know. But that's the thing, is you have to pay attention to that stuff. Absolutely.
I feel like that should be the tagline though. So easy, a 6-year-old can do it.
Yeah, right. Well, whenever I have people that are hesitant, I'm like, you do know that we've had ages 6 through 82. And they're like, oh man, now I gotta do it. Like, exactly. The 82-year-old was hilarious, because he didn't make our cutoff time, but he was adamant that he kept going. And obviously, you know, that's why we have a cutoff, is so that our 40 volunteers on course aren't up there for an extra 2 hours to accommodate one or two people. But we were at A Basin, and that one actually goes up to 13,700 feet. And we partner with A Basin's medical team. Their patrol is the primary people, the personnel on the mountain. And they were like, hey, we ran by the team, and they're like, we're all cool staying up here to see this guy finish if you want to approve it. And I'm like, oh, you guys are cool with it, then absolutely, let's let him rip. So he did take, you know, another hour. We were done with the awards by the time he came down. We were in the middle of breakdown, but the whole place just absolutely went bonkers to bring this guy through the finish line. And he was 82 years old. It was pretty special. But Yeah, you can go for Cirque Series to start with this little side mention there, but you can register for the Cirque Series Net Champs. So if you just go to our website, Cirque Series, you'll see the snowbird race. And there's a pro category. And I'm going to be chatting with USATF a little more just to tweak the website a little bit. So there'll be some, more, I guess, branding and I guess definitions of how we are hosting on the website. So I have that meeting with them next week. So the website as of now doesn't have a lot of, it doesn't have any mention of it because I'm not sure exactly how to fulfill and adhere to their guidelines. So TBD.
Well,
But you can sign up for it now. Just go to
yeah.
the pro category.
And we'll include the links for both of those, like the Ultra sign up and the Cirque Series page, just so it's easier to, for people to find as well. But I'm excited that like registration's already open.
Yeah. I guess another question would be, when do they close? Is it until the week of the race? Okay.
Yeah,
Awesome.
ours, I mean, I'll probably just keep some spaces as when we start to sell out because we usually sell out like a month before the race. But I think in light of probably some people that want to compete that are at the elite level, not knowing their schedule until a couple weeks before the race, we'll probably hold a couple spots just for that purpose.
What's your
That's
limiting
very
factor? What makes
kind.
you put a cap on it? Is that what the tournament's
We've
for?
done 500 people. I'm in the middle of trying to negotiate for 600 for all our races this year, but it's historically been 500 people.
Okay, I guess my question is who picks 500? What's the limiting factor? Do they say that's too many people on trail? Is it too many parking spots? Is it what would make it be 500? Just curious.
Nope, it's more of a, that's just the number we came up with, and we thought we'd fill that out. And I had a 5-year permit with the Forest Service, so now we're renewing. And I asked for 600, and I think after doing 5 years at 500, I have full confidence that the impact and the course designs we have will be fine. And we also put $1,000 into a nonprofit after each race to have them rewalk the trail. And just make sure it's perfect. And we have a crew of three people that go right after the last runner and pull out all our flagging. So we definitely take that part of the stewardship of the high alpine environment seriously. So I have full confidence that 600 is gonna be completely fine, totally reasonable.
That's cool. Yeah, it's always interesting to hear. I mean, people show up to the races and they get to experience the end result of many, many months of work from the RD's perspective. But you guys are constantly leveraging and having to, build these awesome experiences within these guidelines based on where your event is happening. So it's always interesting to have that insight as well. All the balls that you guys are juggling and the people you're trying to somewhat keep happy, et cetera, who are putting those guardrails in place. So speaking again, we want to highlight anyone could sign up for these races. So if you have a family member that's wanting to go for the win in the USA Championship, heck, bring the whole entire family. We got 6-year-olds to 82-year-olds signing up for these races, which is really cool. But for those that are gunning for those spots, to represent our country, et cetera, is there any prize money for those folks at your guys' races?
Yeah.
We do $1,000 for top first place male and $1,000 first place female, and pay cash for second and third place as well. But winners do get $1,000.
Cool.
We have a $4,000 prize purse, but more seems like more people are interested in because we also have a upper walking boss challenge where there's $1,500 in there. So yeah, there's some prize money for it.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah. And thanks for doing that. It definitely helps those folks that are pursuing this as their, full-time gig, et cetera. As far as getting there, what, like, logistically, what is the closest airport for people to fly into?
Mine's super easy. You just land in Salt Lake City International and snowbirds, 35-minute Uber or rental car, or there's even buses that go. You can take the train to far end of the valley, and then from there take a bus. Like, that's pretty easy to get up there, which is pretty insane, to be in such a world-class mountain environment and have an international airport just 30 minutes away.
Yeah, we have three. I mean, Manchester's probably the closest. That's probably like an hour. Can be a little bit more expensive, $1,500 more than going into Boston or Portland. But both those airports are there as well.
And like in terms of accommodations, what would you guys recommend? Like
I mean,
where?
mouth of Little Cottonwood Canyon, there's all kinds of, Hampton Inns and all the rest. And then, 5 minutes up or 10 minutes up the canyon at Snowbird, there's thousands of beds available at their Cliff Lodge, and they have various other accommodations like right there at the mountain if you want to go that route too. And I'm gonna arrange with Snowbird to have some kind of discounted rate for everyone coming in. So yeah, if you can stay up there, it's just so beautiful, and the Cliff Lodge is amazing. So that's what I'd certainly stress, because if you go down to the mouth of the canyon, you're in the valley of Salt Lake, and obviously Salt Lake's a beautiful town, but if you can actually be up, you can acclimate more, you got to just take in the scenery more and just make a more full experience out of it rather than just sitting in some random hotel at the mouth of the canyon.
Yeah, same. It's Loon Mountain ski resort, so it's perfect. You can stay right at the mountain. The whole town is our lodges and hotels and breweries and all that good stuff. So it's a pretty small town, but it has quite a few hotels there.
That's awesome. Yeah, because a lot of times for people's first trail runs, they get intimidated by that. Like, is this going to be out in the middle of nowhere? Am I camping in my car? Like, what does this look like for me and my family, et cetera? So it's nice to know that these are very accessible races for everyone. You got some big airports that you can fly in and out of, and there's accommodations nearby. Personally speaking, at least one time a year in Europe, I'm driving on like a tiny mountain road in the middle of the dark for like 2 hours, trying to get to a little hut in the forest to figure out how I'm going to stay for races. So, yes, very accessible races for everyone. Kind of wrapping up, kind of like these logistics and things leading up to the event. Do either of your events have any training runs that people can come out to seek out the course? Or are these places that they can go and run at the course if they live nearby?
Yeah, I mean, usually what happens with the national championships is they'll send teams. So, Brooks will be there, Hoka will be there, and they usually have, shakeout runs 2 days before. Usually we'll do a bib pickup at, 5 on Friday. They'll have an evening run, they'll have a Saturday morning run.
Yeah, we have a pretty similar thing going on. We'll put it out on our Instagram, or we'll put it in our competitor emails that week. People will get their, bid pickup information and any shakeout runs and training runs available. And our course, you can go hike it anytime you want. You can download the GPX from our website to make sure that you're on the actual trail, because it is kind of a big mix of a bunch of trails. The complete our full trail, but it's really easy and pretty intuitive.
Well, we really appreciate you guys coming on and giving us your logistics and your advice and just talking about the US Championships. But one last question before we finish up would be just, and not even a question really, give us your last pitch as to why people should come out to your race and race the US Championships this year.
I think that's the wrong question. I think why should they do both? Back to backs. I think
Yes,
that's
love
the
that.
question.
Absolutely.
That'd be a pretty cool double. I mean, going from 3,000 feet to 11,000 feet, like, you want to test your body. That'll do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact that we have a tram at Snowbird that you can always take it down if you really want to. No, I love the Wasatch. I grew up in Salt Lake City, Utah, and it's just like this small, beautiful, really extreme, user-friendly, accessible mountain range that is world class. Lots of other mountain ranges all over the planet could swallow the Wasatch up because they're much bigger, vaster, wider, gnarlier, but Wasatch has got some cool things going on. I put it up against, you know, any mountain out there. So I'm just excited to bring more people into the Wasatch Range and have them experience mountains that I've fell in love with my whole life, and have them walk away with a big time challenge and, you know, a new mountain range that they can say is familiar to them and probably, you know, visit time and time again.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I'll say too, as an extra pitch for doing these doubles, again, these courses just represent two great ways of replicating any race that you would do in the world. So if you are interested and, you know, potentially like going further in your professional career, elite career, maybe you're seeking out a sponsorship, these are great testing grounds for yourself. Also, earning your spot on a Team USA team is something you'll never regret, and having that experience, whether you're new to the sport or old to the sport, it's just like so cool to wear the USA jersey overseas. Getting to test yourself against not just the nation's best athletes, but the world's best athletes. And honestly, from like a calendar standpoint, if you are a professional athlete still building out your calendar, these are greatly timed in the season. You're kind of like right before the bigger, longer mountain races. So if you want to touch upon that speed and those shorter efforts before you really get going in July, August, and September, there's no Golden Trail Series races in July. So this is a great time to keep up on your fitness if that is a series that you are seeking out. So nothing but pros for both of these courses to do these doubles. So hopefully we can get a ton of people out there at both these races.
Yeah, I just want to give a quick shout out to Tom because, like I said, I'd had some dialogue to get one of our races to be Nat Champs. And he reached out to me a few months ago and really wanted some great insight that helped, you know, streamline the whole kind of selection process and have, you know, for me what to expect. But it was instrumental. So thank you, Tom. I appreciate it. And I'll probably still be reaching out to ask more questions as the races get near.
Anytime. Yeah, I'm excited to come up to snowboard and run.
Yeah, I want to get out soon sometime. With our, you know, six races, it's challenging to squeeze anything else in, but I'll get out there one of these days, I promise.
We're big Tom fans on this podcast too, so
thank you, appreciate it.
Thanks again for joining us, you guys, and this has been the SubHub podcast brought to you by Free Trail. Make sure you guys go subscribe, like, YouTube, Instagram, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast. Thanks.